Canes fans, we recap a surprising University of Miami win against the University of Virginia. Talk about what Sunday means to mom and myself and how important it is, and preview this Georgia Tech game. I swear to gosh, if we lose this game, you're going to hear some fire next week. About it, Mom.
Oh my gosh, what a surprise. Am I excited to be on this podcast this week?
A lot easier when you win games, that's for sure, to do this podcast.
Yes, you're right about that. I am an excited Canes fan again. Not that I wasn't always. Sometimes more, some weeks more than others.
That's fair, for sure. I'm happy at how well they played. I'm a little surprised on how well they played. I definitely thought, as we talked about, they were going to come out flat as usual, and they didn't, which was great.
Not one bit. None of them.
Yeah, offense, defense, and special teams, which was pretty amazing to see. And again, one of those where it actually ends up being frustrating because you think of the other games that you've lost or that the team has lost this year and just think, man, they could easily be 6-0 right now.
Of course they could. Oh my gosh. But maybe they'll win out. Well, that would be a lot to ask.
Yes, let's just start one game at a time and at least go over this last one.
Okay, let's do it.
Well, it was great. One of the big stats that I loved was that we only had 4 penalties. And I think that's not a coincidence that we played so much better.
And 2 of them were because of the targeting.
We're getting to that in a little bit.
Okay.
That was pretty frustrating. But let's talk about the good stuff so far. And start with this offensively. It was such a great first drive by the Canes. They drove right down the field. I like the screenplay to DJ Dallas to get him the ball and get in the end zone. And they definitely did not come out flat. And I don't think they really came out flat. While they didn't score, they didn't come out flat for the rest of that first quarter. They just missed plays.
You know that they now have a cumulative 27 points in the first quarter for the 6 games. So they are averaging plus 4 points for first quarter. I can't wait until we get to an average of 6 points or more per first quarter of a game. We should be able to do it in another 2-3 games.
Well, we would have also been able to do it if our receivers had caught the ball on some of those deep passes. Yes, I know that ball to Jeff Thomas in the end zone was tipped, but he's good enough to come up with that. And I know Hightower and Pope missed a couple, which was pretty frustrating that we were getting good play calls, we were having guys open, but we still couldn't connect on them. That also leads me into Perry. It was nice to see good quarterback play, and especially from him. I will start with the negative, where even on some of those throws, yes, it was on the receivers, but then he missed a couple long throws without putting it on to them. We easily could have had 21 points that first quarter.
Well, he tends to overthrow his long balls, just as Williams tends to underthrow his long balls. Can we not get to a happy medium and have the quarterback throw right on the receiver?
That would be nice. I think if that was the case, we would have known our starting quarterback a lot earlier at the beginning of the season and during training camp.
Well, having said all that, though, I did think Perry, again, showed more maturity than last year. And I think he did very well, all things considered.
I think there were 2 things that he did really well that shows his maturity as a quarterback. First thing is he got the ball out a lot quicker than he did last year. And I remember when we went 2 years ago to camp and watched him play it was 2 years ago I went and saw it, but he held on to the ball too long as a true freshman. I was like, that's why he's not going to play. You know, he was staring down guys. It was very obvious that he wasn't ready for that. That showed up last year still. He hadn't gotten rid of that. And this game he did. I mean, he did a little bit in the Virginia Tech game. Probably also helped that he knew he was going to be the starter. So he was a little bit more prepared going into it. And something else he did really well was extending the play. We only had 3 sacks, but we could have had about 6 or 7 sacks if he hadn't been able to feel the pressure, spin out of those plays, and kept plays going because he was aware of what was going on.
He did a good job of that. I was impressed.
Yeah, so that was great to see. And again, this is kind of what I'm talking about of, okay, you know your offensive line's a problem. Probably putting in a freshman quarterback that hasn't a lot of playing experience and is going to feel a lot of pressure. This is where that actually hurts Williams. And I blame some of the coaching staff of not recognizing that of, hey, yes, Williams is a talented player, but the issue here is he's still young, and you put him against with an offensive line that's just going to let up defensive pressure the entire game. That's really going to hurt his psyche as a player going forward.
Right. Agreed.
Again, I think Perry looked good. Again, not totally sold on him. I would like to see him put it together for, you know, a few more games, and has a good chance of doing that this coming week against Georgia Tech. I'm still shocked that we had one day less going into this week than the 2 weeks that we had for the bye week, and we looked more prepared.
Well, let's talk about, well, you would like to talk about number 60. And quite frankly, that escaped me.
And this is number 60 on the offensive line, Zion Nelson, who was playing left tackle for us through part of the game, and woof, did he get beat a lot on the line. Now, it is tough, and some of it I am realizing that he is a true freshman, so you're asking a lot for this kid to come in and play one of the most important positions on the football field at such a high level, but man, it looked like, one, he wasn't athletic enough to get back to protect, and at times they did not communicate properly, or he went in the wrong direction, leading to some easy hits on Perry and sacks. And again, if Perry hadn't been as athletic as he was, it would have been more of an issue.
But let's talk about the defense.
Yeah, we can get back into the positive. Let's do that. And there's somebody that I know you really wanted to talk about. It wasn't really who I wanted to talk about there. There's somebody that you really wanted to talk about.
I wanted to talk about him last week, but I was a little unsure of myself. But whoa, this Greg Russo, he is an animal.
I'm a little upset that people know we first started our Red Beans and Rice segment last week. If you want to know a little bit behind the scenes here. And it was not a good segment to start, and Mom switched it up last second instead of giving it to Greg Russo, which now I wish we kept that audio of that.
Yes, we would have been, we would have known, prescient, I believe is the word. We would have known in advance. We would have been ahead of all the pundits, all the football, Miami football pundits.
Yes, you were on the pulse before everyone else, Mom, which was great. It was great to see him do that. It reminded me a little bit of when Calais Campbell, my freshman year in 2006, really came onto the scene and was just wreaking havoc. It would be great if that kept up. Then the more that your front four can put pressure on, the more that'll help that young secondary that did a little bit better but still struggles at time, and especially with Carter out the first half this coming week. But Bandy kind of continues to struggle in areas where you're a little surprised about. But defensively, again, we were great. Again, I went a little negative again, but we went full, played a great full 4 quarters there.
Right from the get-go, I was amazed. I was proud of them.
Yes. And didn't create as many turnovers as we'd like, but they still did a great job. You know, it was big. They got into that Virginia went into the red zone 3 times and only came away with 3 field goals each of those times. Yes, you'd love to get a turnover in there and maybe make it 2 for 3 on field goals, but they did a great job of bending and not breaking this game.
Well, you don't have to have a turnover on all these plays as long as you can keep them from scoring a touchdown. I mean, we did hold them to field goals, and that was amazing.
Yes, which was great, and I want them to keep it up, and it was great, too. We had a block kick. I'm huge on special teams, as you know, and I really enjoy when you can block a kick because I think it gives you such an advantage. I view that pretty much the same as a turnover, not just because it actually stops them from scoring. It's a change of possession. You get the ball where the either the block punt was or the block kick was. It then also energizes the team in the same way that the turnover chain does. So that was great to see.
Who blocked that kick?
Was it Russo? I don't know. I have no idea. I can't remember.
I don't know.
I don't think it was.
I don't think it was Russo, but I don't know.
I thought you were just asking me as a question and you were going to gloat how you knew. I thought it was a question that you had the answer to.
I don't.
Got it. Anyway, on that, you know, great to see that game. You know, you're happy to see it. At the same time, you're frustrated to see it because you know how good this team can be. And now the ACC Coastal is a bit of a mess. So a lot of season left, that's for sure.
Dallas is always tops on my list.
I'm going to stop you and just tell you right now, I think what we're going to do is DJ Dallas obviously just gets it every week. So from here on out, DJ Dallas officially making decree, always gets red beans and rice. It's just who else gets it at this point?
Well, and I have to give some credit to Davidson, who came in on special teams. Walk on. Here's Sarah for the walk ons.
Let's go. So you're the walk-ons at Miami.
Yes. I thought Harley did a good job. I thought Osborne did a good job. But I have to give the red beans and rice to Russo because I didn't get to him last week when I should have. But he certainly deserved it this week.
That's for sure. I think that's because he heard that we canceled that audio or took that audio out last week and he was motivated to get it this week. So congratulations to Craig Russo.
Right. And Muffins go to, we haven't, in this podcast, we haven't talked about this, but I thought Bandy showed a great deal more field presence than he had in the last five games. And he was in there. He was in there on the plays. He was doing what he was supposed to do for the most part. So I have to give him the Muffins. I have to say, good going. Get back in there. You're a top-notch player, and you were looking like it on Friday night.
Well, that's good, because I didn't think he played as well, so you saw more than I did. I think at this point I'm just expecting him not to play as up to the level that he did the last 2 years. So if you're seeing it more and recognizing it, then I'm happier.
Good. All right. There you go.
All right. So let's recap. Greg Russo and Bandy get the red beans and rice and chocolate chip muffins, and two defensive players, which is not the way that it usually happens for you. And we have officially now given DJ Dallas the red beans and rice and chocolate chip muffins, since every week you open up, well, I want to give it to DJ, but he's just automatically gets it now.
And I have to give a shout out. I don't know if you saw this because you weren't at home watching the game, were you?
Second half, I heard this sound, but yes, go ahead.
They did a little spot on Al Blades Jr. writing poetry to his mom. And aww. You know I have a soft spot for the players who recognize their moms.
I missed that part. So yes, that's awesome. And great to see. And it reminds you that, you know, University of Miami is just a bunch of thugs and all that. So
yes, exactly. It was a sweet spot.
Switching gears here. A year ago, we did a really great episode on talking about how we lost Dad to suicide and what led up to that moment and that day on October 20th. This Sunday for us is 11 years for losing Dad, which is pretty mind-boggling to think it's already been 11 years, let alone just a year since we talked about the 10 years since losing him. And this year, like I did last year, I am walking for the American Foundation of Suicide Prevention on the same day that we lost Dad, which is pretty an interesting coincidence that all the walks are happening again this year on October 20th, even moving cities and things like that. So I am kind of moved by that and think it's a very interesting coincidence, especially if you have any type of feeling towards that. So doing that again, I'll put more information about how to donate, and I'm also going to repost the episode from last year, because again, I think we did such a great job of talking about it and helping bring awareness about suicide prevention.
Well, we don't keep it a secret.
No, and as I said last year, and again, for those that are new listeners, definitely go back and listen, and you can hear more of the story. But for what the biggest thing and the biggest takeaway that I'm always so proud of what you did is that you accepted what it was immediately, and you told everyone immediately what it was and what happened, especially at a time when it's still the stigma of suicide was a tough subject to talk about. You didn't really want to make a lot of noise about it. People were afraid to bring it up because of the stigma around it. And we're still a long way from fully getting rid of that stigma, but the 11 years since then has definitely seen a lot of improvement. But again, you know, you just led such a good example. You said immediately what it was. You told everyone what it was. If you didn't do that, I think we could have seen a very different way that you and I handled that.
Well, depression is a serious disease, and it's a quiet disease, because oftentimes the people who have depression, it comes on gradually, and though you notice that there's a difference in the person, it's not like one day that person is one way and the next day has completely changed. It's a very slow, gradual process. And it's not like they go to the doctor and get diagnosed with heart disease or cancer. They don't talk about it.
Yes.
And oftentimes they don't talk about it until it's too late.
And that's one of the things I'm hoping, if you listen to this, you could take time to donate. We understand if you aren't able to donate or anything, but the things that you can do to absolutely make a difference, and we hope that you do this week, is if you are in a great mental place and you feel comfortable, is to call anyone. Doesn't have to be somebody even you worry about. Is just call anyone, check in on how they're doing, ask, you know, is everything all right? And it could turn out that both of you are great and there's no need to go any further than that. It could turn out that both of you just need to vent, and sometimes that venting process helps, or just talking about it, where neither of you are headed into any state of depression, but it's a good thing still to do. And then the most important thing that could maybe happen is that it's finally a chance for somebody to share before, as you're talking about, where depression really consumes you and it's this gradual decline into depression, that you are getting it before it really starts and somebody can recognize that they need help, which I think is something that we're still not at a great spot, but definitely a little bit better.
We're not trained to do it. It's not something, as you said, that we talk about. And it just needs to be exposed.
Absolutely.
In ways that many of the other problems of our health problems of our lives have been exposed.
Exactly.
You just need to get it out there.
And the other thing that you can do is, if you are feeling, and please, if you are feeling any mental fatigue, any type of illness, or even if you're feeling that you're headed towards any depression, please reach out to somebody, anyone. If someone doesn't listen the first time, find someone to still talk to. Remember, you're not alone in this. There are so many people going through this, and it's the more you keep it to yourself, the harder it's going to be. And as we talked about last year with this mom, and you know, it's a lot of things that we've done where we've done research, we've talked with other people that have, you know, gone through it and have lost family members from it, or people that have attempted suicide going through it, that there's this feeling And it's not that they're trying to abandon life and give up. It's they feel that they're a burden on their family. And that's the most important thing that we tell people and want to people to understand. And part of the problem where it is depression, you're not a burden on your family. Yes, it might be tough. And yes, it might seem like that, but it's not the case. Trust me, your family much rather have you here.
That's right. Your family would prefer to work through the problem just like they would any other medical problem.
Please, if you have a chance, I'll again repost the episode. If you have any opportunity, please donate. Again, I'll post on the different social media pages that we have. And then finally, if you don't do either of those two things, which is totally fine and we understand, is please reach out to someone or talk to someone and check how they're doing. And focusing on the college football stuff. I know we did the serious part. Now we get to do the fun, goofy stuff. We take football way too seriously, especially with everything else that's going on, especially what we just talked about. So let's get back into the goofy stuff.
What do you mean we take it too seriously?
Yes, because it's definitely not you and me yelling at the TV screen and scaring off people.
Yeah, not many people understand. Well, some there are a lot of people who understand. Just not a lot of my friends.
Exactly. And yeah, the feeling of Sunday mornings when we wake up with another hurricane loss and how it just kind of ruins your start of your Sunday.
Yes, it does.
There's such a different feeling between a Miami Hurricanes win on a Sunday morning and a Miami Hurricanes loss on a Sunday morning.
Exactly.
We're looking at Georgia Tech and man, we better not have a sad Sunday morning because this team is really bad. And I know I said that about Virginia Tech and we still lost, but this team is much worse. Really, really bad. Much worse than Virginia Tech. This is if they lose to this game at home at noon in Miami, this is way more embarrassing than the Virginia Tech loss.
Oh, I think I probably would just abandon the season.
So let's not let that happen. This is a team that was running the triple option offense before, and thank goodness we don't have to see that again. Georgia Tech head coach Paul Johnson retired after about 10, 11 years at the helm at Georgia Tech, and so we will not be seeing the triple option offense anymore. Thank goodness. It's glad to see it go, but the spread and the classic college offense that you see nowadays is being installed. And you can definitely tell watching any of the Georgia Tech tape that they have the athletes still for the triple option and not the spread.
Well, that could be good for us.
Absolutely.
But it could be bad about 4 years from now.
Could be. We can worry about that in 4 years. Not right now. This is the game that Miami needs to show that they've moved on from the UNC, from the Virginia Tech game, coming out flat against a lesser opponent. They have to come out and control this game immediately from start to finish. They have to be offensively a lot better than Georgia Tech. They have to come out defensively and make Georgia Tech feel uncomfortable. They have a very bad offensive line, and I expect Greg Rousseau to build on what he did in this Virginia game.
James Graham is supposed to be a decent passer, but he, like another team we know, has no O-line backing.
Yes, so hopefully, and again, I think their O-line is even worse than ours, so we better see a lot of pressure. I don't want to see the same thing that happened against Virginia Tech, where you get a kid in there, and the quarterback gains some confidence against a good Miami defense, and the next thing you know, James Graham is playing a really good game against a Miami team that should be beating him. They've got to make him uncomfortable. Again, there just needs to be really good pressure. It all starts with the defensive line getting good pressure on this quarterback, disrupting it, and hopefully creating some turnovers.
Right from the very start.
Yes, it seems to be like the UNC game from last year on that Thursday night where we just came out and won the game, I think 48-10. didn't let a bad team into that game at all. That's what this team needs to show. If you want to show, and now a Coastal Division that's pretty up in the air again with Virginia taking a loss to us, if you want to show that you want to play in this Coastal Division for the rest of the year, come out and dominate this game.
There's no excuse if they don't.
Exactly. And yes, they will not have Carter to start the game. I'm going to get into that a little bit because I didn't get into it in the first segment. But the referee choice to throw him out of the game, while I think questionable and you can still see it, I don't agree with the targeting. I think that Carter was trying to actually put his shoulder in, but because both players had their helmets so low on the play and it was a hard hit, it was a targeting call. I get why that happens. But I will say the second thing that happened was the referees not letting him sub out properly or just throwing a flag on him for a legal substitution, I thought was ridiculous. Yes, these guys were asking a lot from them as 18 to 22 year olds, but at the same time, they're still 18 to 22 year olds. You easily could have called an official's timeout, make sure the kid got off the field in the proper way. He wasn't doing anything malicious to stay on the field.
Well, he seemed visibly confused. He certainly did not seem hostile.
No, and God forbid, you know, he also took a hit to the head there. He might have something going on there as well with a concussion or something. I'm not saying that he did, but if you're a referee and you see how he was acting, that looks like some type of confusion. If you want to talk about safety, don't be flag happy and throw this guy, you know, throw another penalty because you want to show that you're in charge. Get the kid out of the game. You can give him a warning. If he was hostile, I'd be on the referee side, but he was not. And there were some other calls that game on both sides that I know you want to get off your chest a little bit.
Oh, could that be the two missed face mask penalties that were so obvious? So obvious. I mean, one was Dallas was carrying the ball. All eyes should have been on Dallas. All eyes. And it was such a flagrant face mask. And then there was one on them.
Yeah, Perkins, again, who also had the ball, we got away with one. You know, it's nice that we both got away with one, but that's not how it should be going.
No,
it shouldn't be bad calls make you feel better. It's got to be better officiating.
Well, there's no perfect officiating, but when it's that obvious, when it's that flagrant, there's something wrong.
And I've been not on the same side as a lot of people where they say the ACC officials are out to get us every game. I think every fan base says that. But I do say that the ACC officiating has not been great over the last few years. And for one of the top conferences in college football producing a national champion, I think that's a pretty bad reflection on the conference. It looks like we have Mountain West, if not lower, referees usually reffing these games. It looks like referees that aren't ready and prepared for good athletes playing in these games. You and I talked about this story before, but to share with the audience, when we played our bowl game in Boise, Idaho, a couple of the coaches were talking about, and it was a great point, that we were getting referees from a conference that wasn't used to the same speed that we were playing in, the ACC or the SEC or the Big 10, Big 12, Pac-12, or Pac-10 back then, I guess, and that we have to be ready for that and prepared for it. So we might see some calls go against us because the referees just aren't used to how fast we are or how big or hitting that we are. Luckily, in that game, nothing came up. The reason we played so slow or struggled to win that game against Nevada was definitely not because of the referees. Thank goodness. But it just looks like what we're talking about, what was made that point back then, is being shown in this ACC officiating, where it just needs to get better and the conference needs to improve.
We just need to recruit some good referees.
Yes. The NFL is having the same problem this weekend, though, so I feel a little bit better, but it's something that's definitely needs to be fixed and looked at, because it's gonna hurt in a really important game at some point. Yes, Clemson's going to run away for this conference, but in a year or two, if things get a little bit even again, it's not going to be a good look, and we're going to regret it some way, somehow. But anyway, let's get into predictions about this game, a little transition, so we can then close it out. We're going to hold off on recipes, but Mama Hayes has promised me she's bringing one next week, and it's going to be delicious, so get excited. Mom, what is your prediction? What are you cooking up as a prediction for this week?
I'm predicting that we will win. I wouldn't give a score, but I would think we'd win by two. Well, I would think we'd win by three touchdowns.
Nice. I think we win by three touchdowns, but I say it's going to be around like 28-7 or 25, like 24-7. I guess that's not three touchdowns, but 28-7 is. I think...
My math major son.
There you go.
That's right. You weren't a math major.
No, I was not. Sadly, I was not. We've seen it where we keep expecting these blowouts or these big wins, but Miami keeps coming out really slow. And so until they really prove me wrong, I think we come out slow. I think luckily Georgia Tech's really bad and we pull away late, you know, with two touchdowns to get a better looking score. But I think it's one of those where until they prove us wrong, I'm not going to expect it.
I'm being more positive.
Yes, but both of us expect them to win. Again, if they lose this game, that's really embarrassing and they better be focused and ready to come out. No noon lull.
I don't believe that I've been right so far this season, so don't go by me.
Well, you did pick the Bethune-Cookman for us to win, so we're good on that. And the Central Michigan game. We just didn't have the scores exactly right, which is okay.
Not quite.
You know, it doesn't say how, it says how many. So that's the most important thing. Anyway, let's take us out of here for this week, Mom. As always, thank you for joining. Break us down.
C-A-N-E-S,
Canes. Woo! Thank you, everyone, for listening. That's another episode of Walking On with Chris Hayes. Again, I will send another link for donating for this Sunday. Appreciate any help that we get. Be good, everyone. Have a great week. And as always, go Canes.
Go Canes!